Our next presentation is titled Managing Palmer Amaranth and Cotton Using Cover Crops and Herbicides. Matt Wiggins, University of Tennessee.
Okay, thank you for that introduction, Mike, and thanks for all of you being here this afternoon. As you said, my name is Matthew Wiggins. I'm a PhD student at the University of Tennessee. And today I get the opportunity to present some of my dissertation project, which is looking at integrating cover crops and herbicides for weed control in cotton. As many of you know, glyphosate-resistant weeds continue to still be the most problematic weeds in Tennessee and much of the Mid-South. In Tennessee now, we do have six weed species that are resistant to glyphosate. Unfortunately, in the future, we're probably looking to add to that number, but you can see in the next slide, we just have a visual indicator of really what we're battling. So not only are we looking at broadleaf species, but we're also battling a glyphosate-resistant grass species as well. And this throws something else into the mix as far as getting adequate weed control. But still, our primary driver weed for our herbicide management options is Palmer amaranth. Part of this is due to its biology and it's just its competitiveness. If you've had any dealings with Palmer amaranth, you understand that it has a very lengthy germination window. Even though it's considered to be a summer annual plant, it can be seen germinating any time from March to October as long as growing conditions are conducive for that. It also has a very robust growth habit. A very large amount of viable seeds can be produced per female plant. And it also has the ability to thrive in very limiting conditions. In Tennessee and much of the Mid-South, we really have adopted more of a systematic approach to controlling Palmer amaranth, and really we're managing it more than we're controlling it. Our keys to control that we really are emphasizing to our producers is to start clean. And this is really going to happen. We're going to do this by utilizing a burn down. We're going to use pre-emergence applications, residual herbicides, and hope for a rainfall to get activated. In season, we're looking at post-emergence applications, both early and late, either over the top or with a post-directed or a hooded rig. In these cases, we still need to be very timely with our applications to attain adequate control. We're also starting to look at other integrated control measures to control Palmer amaranth, whether that's tillage, row spacing, or cover crops in some cases. In West Tennessee, tillage is not a very viable option because we have a lot of soils that are prone to erosion. Row spacing is typically, based off of tractor implements and really the producer's preference. And cover crops is something that's just kind of came up here recently that a lot of producers are starting to show interest in. So we're starting to do a little bit more research in it to better understand the management practices and what it offers as far as weed control goes. We talked a little bit about making timely applications of post-emergence herbicides. Here listed are both glyphosate and glufosinate, which are the two primary technologies that we're using in the Mid-South and West Tennessee now. We're still using some glyphosate technology. It's still pretty effective in controlling most grass species and some broadleaf species, but it offers very minimal control for Palmer amaranth in areas of resistance. Glufosinate is pretty effective in controlling most broadleaf species, including Palmer amaranth, but it can be weak on the grass species. So both these technologies really have their strengths and their weaknesses. But regardless, we're still going to make timely applications are going to be essential for good control. Really, we're targeting Palmer when it's really less than 5 inches, even though my slide says 5 to 6 inches. And in most cases, we're going to have to make a follow-up sequential application 14 days later to ensure that we've got good control. Cover crops have long been known to increase soil quality, whether it's soil aggregate size or water quality. Legumes are known to fixate nitrogen into the soil, which can obviously be a very good benefit for a crop using nitrogen, such as cotton, and also been documented to provide some weed suppression, whether that's a physical barrier where the cover crop itself is shading out young seedling weeds or through a little pack effect, depending on what species it is. So really our main objective of this study was to evaluate Palmer amaranth control in response to this integrated system that includes both post-emergent herbicides and cover crop residues. Our hypothesis statement is that cotton yield and weed control of Palmer amaranth will not differ among treatments of glufosinate and glyphosate and the cover crops. We put forth a study at the West Tennessee Research and Education Center in Jackson, Tennessee, where we use the cotton variety Fibermax 1944, which has the Glytol Liberty Link technology, We chose this variety not only for its fit in Tennessee in the Mid-South, but also for its full tolerance to glufosinate and glyphosate. Therefore, we didn't have to really worry about crop injury when we made our post-emergence applications. And then we have planting dates and harvest dates that are pretty typical for our situation. Herbicide application in this case were made when Palmer Amaranth was 3 to 5 inches, and this was actually when the cotton had about 2 or 3 true leaves and not 5 true leaves. Our sequential application that we made in this program was made at that 5 leaf stage. The application equipment that we used was a CO2 backpack sprayer where we used the AIXR flat fan nozzles. We had an application rate of 15 gallons per acre and a walking speed of 4 miles an hour. Our plot size is also listed. Typical agronomic practices for much of the Mid-South is a no-till production site with row spacing of 38 inches, and all other agronomic practices, including fertility, other than weed control, were followed UT Extension protocol. Cover crops were drilled in September of the previous year and allowed to overwinter. We used a no-till drill, and adequate stand was acquired with all of our cover crop species. In this study, we're looking to evaluate cereal rye, winter wheat, hairy vetch, and crimson clover. So we've got 2 grass species and 2 legume species. Seeding rates were adjusted for viable seed, as there were a lack in some of the germination rates. And then all of our cover crops were terminated approximately three weeks prior to our cotton planting date. To terminate, we used a paraquat with a non-ionic surfactant. The data that we're really interested that we collected this year and will continue to collect as this study moves forward is above ground biomass of the cover crops. We did that by clipping a 0.1 meter square quadrant and drying those samples at 60 degrees Celsius for 72 hours. And what we're really interested in this biomass number is because this value is really going to directly influence early season weed control. A heavier residue cover crop should in theory give us more early season weed control. Also interested in weekly weed control ratings. It's just a visual rating of 0 to 100%, where 100% is complete control. We also took weed counts at 2 different timings in this study. Unfortunately, we didn't see any separation there, and so it was not statistically significant. So therefore, just for the brevity of this presentation, we're not really going to cover that data today. But then we're also going to be interested in lint yield. It was a randomized complete block design with a factorial treatment arrangement with 4 applications. We used PROC mix with SAS 9.3 to analyze the data, where mains were separated using Fisher's protected LSD at the alpha level of 0.05. Here listed are both our main treatments, both the 5 cover treatments that we've already mentioned, and then our 3 herbicide applications, where we're using a standard rate of both herbicides. I just want to take just a quick second and set up the slide, because this slide format is going to stay the same throughout the rest of the presentation. We're on the x-axis. We're going to be looking at our variables we're interested in evaluating. In this case, it's going to be cover crop species. And on our y-axis, we have biomass in this case, and we'll move further into weed control ratings in a second. So what we can really take away from this, if you look to your left, winter wheat and cereal rye provided the highest amount of biomass in this situation, where the legumes were still higher than the fallow area. All of these cover crops were still added to early season weed control. You'll see that as we move forward, but our heavier biomass are going to provide the most weed control in season. And so with 7 days after application of our post-emergent application, averaged by cover crop, you can see the separation there. As we move 14 days after, we can start to see those grass species are providing a little bit more control of Palmer amaranth. They're able to persist a little bit longer on that soil surface and add to the shading and control of Palmer amaranth. And the same trends are going to be true 21 days and 28 days after our application of post-emergent herbicides. Same setup here, except for I'm going to throw all these up on the same graph, so it will be a little bit busy toward the end. As I mentioned before, it is typical 14 days later to make a sequential application of glufosinate, and we did that in this case. So you'll see we've got a trend where glufosinate, of course, is going to give us the most control, as these plots did have glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth in them. We've got a big rainfall event, and you can see we've got a new flush of weeds, and that's when we made our sequential application. But we see a trend starting to form there, of course, a glufosinate-based system in use with these cover crops is going to be the better option from what this data set shows. Lint yield by herbicide actually this year did not separate. And what we feel is going on here is that we had a lot of environmental conditions that may be coming into play here, had continuous flushes of weeds throughout the season. So that just really goes to show us, even with these herbicides, that a residual herbicide is definitely going to be needed, and the cover crops are not going to be an answer to our problem, but it is going to be an effective tool to help control Palmer amaranth in the future. It did statistically separate by cover crop, but it's kind of all over the board. We really still don't understand what's going on here. We still like to think that it is some environmental conditions coming in, whether that was the cool weather, the lack of DD60 accumulation this year, but the cereal rye was the highest averaging cover crop species when looking at lint yield. So just real fast to cover our conclusions, the wheat and the cereal rye provided the greatest amount of dry biomass before termination, and this really added to early season weed controls we saw in our data. Also, glufosinate provided the greatest amount of control, and this is going to be the case in most of West Tennessee and the Mid-South where resistant populations are present. And glyphosate did have some efficacy, but still a subpar to what we need to control this problematic weed. And even though yields did separate by cover crop, we still really don't understand what's going on there, and we do think it's something environmental, and herbicide application had no effect on yield. So we would reject our null hypothesis and accept the alternate that weed control of Palmer amaranth will differ among treatments of glyphosate, glufosinate, and the cover crops as part of this integrated system. Moving forward into the future, we would be interested in maybe evaluating some more cover crops, and not necessarily more species, but maybe start looking at some combinations, what we might add from putting a legume and a grass species together and stuff of that nature. Also, investigating termination timing as far as managing these cover crops. When do I terminate my cover crop to get the most biomass, to get the most early season weed control? So that's something we're interested in evaluating. Then maybe start looking, see what the actual mechanism for weed suppression is. Are we seeing a little pack effect with any of these cover crop species in our area, or are we looking at more just a physical barrier and shading situation? But with that, I think I have a few minutes for questions if anybody has one.
Question?
Yes, sir.
With all of this planted flat, and also, where was your biomass sample taken in relation to your rows? Was it always in between, or where the crop row would be planted?
All right, so the question is where we pulled the biomass samples from, and was these planted on flat? And it was just flat, no-till production area, and we took our biomass samples from the center of the two rows where the cotton plots were going to go in at. Yes, sir.
Which species do you think had the potential of having the kind of allelopathic characteristics?
Now, the question is what species might have allelopathic effects? And I'm going to go with cereal rye. It has been documented to have some allelopathic effects, but we still don't really think maybe that's what's going on here, even though it was the highest yielding. Because it did have a high biomass accumulation, we think there was still something more environmentally going on there, more so than the allelopathic effect.
Matt, do you think there's an effect? You mentioned the effect of using pre-herbicides with these cover crops. What do you think will be the effect of on these pre-herbicides with in use in conjunction with the cover crops?
The question is using pre-emergent herbicide residual chemistry in conjunction with these cover crops. And we actually have another study ongoing at the station where we're looking at that effect. And what we're seeing is we are still getting some residual control out of the herbicide along with the cover crops, but still it's going to be part of a systems approach where we're going to need both post- and pre-emergence applications to get season-long control of this weed. Yes, sir?
Did you see any improved Palmer amaranth growth in the plots that had the legumes?
So the question is, do we see any improved growth in the plots where legumes were planted alone? Yes, sir, that was the case. What we're seeing is not only does cotton enjoy the extra nitrogen that the legumes are adding, but so does the Palmer amaranth. We're really advising our producers not to use a legume as a standalone cover crop, that we're better off mixing it with one of these grass species to negate that effect.
Let's thank our speaker.
Thank you for your time.